the Minivate Gang Podcast. This is Steve Borsch. This is episode 94, recorded Friday, September 17th, 2010. And I'm on with Tim Elliott.
Good morning.
And Phil Wilson.
Good morning, all.
Our buddy Graham is still in California. He was out doing demo, the conference, and live blogging that. You can go to his blog. I'll put that in the show notes. See what happened out there and his reaction to it. And he'll be on next week. But we had kind of an interesting experience last week, last Saturday, at the Minnesota Blogger Conference. Tim,
I thought, great. I thought it was a great event.
Oh, so did I.
Yeah, it was very surprising, I thought.
I really enjoyed it. Well, Tim, what was your topic on again? Why don't you describe that?
It was just a WordPress roundtable kind of a thing. So we basically answered questions. It was more intended for sort of advanced WordPress folks.
Okay.
So that was good. But the conference itself surprised me, because usually we go to these things and we know, 80, 90% of the people.
Right.
And I maybe knew 10% of the people at this one.
It was interesting. All of those people that are out there blogging that I had no idea were blogging. And again, I haven't stumbled across them, a lot of them, because it may not necessarily be my area of interest, but wow, it was great.
Yeah. Well, and our friend of the show and contributor to the Gang Podcast, Julio Ojeda Zapata, did a incredible job when he brought in one of the co-founders of Posterous and Leo Laporte of Twit.tv. He brought those guys in by Skype, and it worked really well.
That was a high wire act, that's for sure.
It
did work.
So my question is that, why do you call it, I mean, if the official name is Posterous, I don't get it. It doesn't work with posting. I figure Posterous makes a lot of sense.
That's what I thought.
Posterous makes no sense.
Yeah, he should have asked the one of the founders. I think it's Gary Tan's the guy's name.
Right.
He should have asked him about that.
Well,
what's the deal with that?
Julio did, but I think it, because he said something about preposterous. And so, that has some origin there. But it would be interesting to hear exactly why, because people are jumping all over the place with it. And today there was an article out about Tumblr versus Posterous in terms of the exponential growth of Tumblr as a microblogging platform, 3.5x growth over Posterous and Soup.io, which I'd never heard of.
Soup.io?
Yeah.
What is the IO domain? Where is that? Where is that?
It's one of the moons of Jupiter, I think.
Yeah.
Great.
No, it's Indonesia, isn't it?
Okay.
I don't know that.
No idea.
Yeah, I don't either. Maybe it's Iowa. Anyway. it was a really good conference. I had some really great conversation with a bunch of people, including Don Ball and Rick Mann, at length. But I also, the woman, Phil, her name's Robin. Last name escapes me. You were talking with her.
Just Robin on Twitter. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not 100% sure how she pronounces her last name.
Okay. So it was interesting to meet people like that. You know, she and I went back and forth on some membership stuff for WordPress blogs. And I was blown away by how many people are leveraging not just blogging technology, but audio and video and other API based stuff they can tap into. It was just really interesting. But then yesterday was an event that was pretty interesting. Graham got pinged by Dan Carr, that runs the collaborative, about attending. And Graham said, no, I'm out of demo, but you really ought to invite Borsch. And so he sent me an invite, and the event yesterday was at the Humphrey Institute down by the Carlson School of Management at the U of M. And it was, started off leveraging technology in your business with Robert Stevens, at Best Buy, the CEO of Summit Brewing Company, who, based on how he supported Social Media Breakfast, he's there, he's all over it. Jim Kuhn from General Mills and Scott Littman moderated. And it was just a great kickoff because the panel was really spot on with their encouragement of leveraging and why and how it was so important. And there were sessions on leveraging technology as your business. Just a really good lineup. I'll put a link to the agenda in the show notes, but I thought it was really fabulous. And how, have you guys been to collaborative events?
No. Who is in the audience for those kind of things?
I mean, it really varied. There were at least six startup founders that I know, but these are startup founders that are you know, former higher level executives in various companies that had come out and have started their own firms. And one example, Lingraj Mishra, who founded Yugma, which is unfortunately no longer around, but he's on another adventure now. And just a lot of different kinds of people like that. So it was just a great event. I was really surprised. But I shouldn't be, I guess. What are your thoughts, Phil, when you think about these different events? You know, there's unconferences that are free. There are meetups and tweetups and other, you know, social media breakfast now is charging $10. I mean, stuff is really low level stuff. And then there are events on the other side that are Minnesota High Tech and the Collaborative and so on, that the barrier to entry is a lot higher from a cost standpoint. And what are your thoughts around, what does that do for startups? I mean, it would seem to me that they're the ones that need to hobnob with Chris Heim that started High Jump Software and Doug Berg founded Jobs to Web and, you know, people like that. You think it's a big barrier?
I think it's important that we have social events or meetup events or in-person events more now, probably more than ever, because it's very easy to default to, you know, this virtual relationship. You're tweeting and emailing and Skyping, and, you know, it's a very sort of closed environment. And I think it's great to get together and be social and talk with people face to face, no matter what that opportunity is, whether that's high level or low level. But I think as far as startups go, I do get concerned about the barrier to entry of some of these and access to these people that consider themselves investors. You know, to be an investor means to go out and work with and look at you know, young companies, startups, and that sort of thing, not hang out with other investors. You got that proverbial hunt where the ducks are. That sometimes I get frustrated or concerned that a lot of people will say, well, I'm going to pursue angel funding. I'm going to be an investor. I'm going to be an angel investor. Just because you've got loot and just because you may not be doing anything else, I get concerned when people call themselves angel investors and then they never spend any money. It's especially here in Minnesota. Believe me, I speak from the standpoint of not having money to invest, you know, other than in, you know, what I do. And I never would ever assume that I could play in that arena as an investor. But at the same time, I want to see more people saying, yes, this is, you know, I'm going to be an angel investor. I'm going to invest this much money over the course of the year in this sector, you know, and that means, well, you may just have to, you know, reach out and take a risk. But again, I think that we need opportunities, more opportunities for real investors to look at real startups and make sure that they can get together and chat. Yeah.
Well, do you think that in the VC community is sort of spooked after kind of Web 1.0 meltdown almost 10 years ago now, and then, you know, we've kind of gone through this Web 2.0 sort of phase that really hasn't produced, you know, huge breakouts, especially locally? I mean, there's been the Facebooks of the world and the Twitters of the world, but there hasn't been you know, a Google that has come out yet. So do you think their expectations are too high?
I think a lot of investors' expectations are too high. There isn't going to be the next, every day you're not going to invest in a company that's going to be gobbled up by Google, you know, that has the exit strategy of we want to be bought. Yeah. You're just not going to come across those. But are they spooked? Sure. I mean, the entire country was spooked after the Depression. It takes a little while. I understand that. And it's a very crowded space. There are a lot of great ideas out there facilitated by the ability of communication through the web and the interactive community. There's a lot of stuff to look at out there. And will all of it be the next Facebook? Nope, sure won't. But will it deliver 15 to 20%? To the bottom line at some point? It might. Hey, that's a business.
Well, what I thought was interesting was there were some questions from the audience during this one particular panel, of which Joy Lindsay from StarTech Investments was on. And there was it was a discussion about funding. And one of the things that, and they've actually had, StarTech has had seven exits and, I think she said one IPO. I can't remember exactly. One IPO for sure, seven exits and three others that I guess they made money on. But during that discussion, somebody asked, what she knew about, you know, the angel space and so forth. And she talked about the angel tax credit, how important that was. And she says, what's really interesting is that angels want to invest locally, and they do most of the seeding of startups, that either startups are, you know, self-funded, and it's easier to do now with the cloud. It's easier to start with nothing and on a shoestring, and have a world-class technical infrastructure, but that most of the angels, do the seeding here of startups before they, get a concept proven. And Dan Grigsby was on this panel, and he said something really interesting, which I absolutely agree with, which was, don't just have a vision or an idea, have something to demo. And then she leveraged off of the Joy Lindsay leveraged off of that. Yeah, but you got to have some customers, because as an investor, you know, once you get seated and you've got something that you can show, we want to see customers. We want to talk to customers before we invest, you know. So it's,
yeah, but the number of customers, I think, yes, everybody likes to see customer, meaning that there's a product that is in demand at some point. But sometimes I feel these investors are looking for, we want to buy in at the peak. We want to get invested at the peak, or, you know, very far up the slope. And when investors need the money is farther down that slope. And I realize the risk is greater the farther down the slope you get, you know, it's closer to the beginning of the product or service.
Yeah.
But that's a frustrating thing. And I speak from experience on our Local Tone radio chats with right. different investors is, you know, yeah, but we need to see, you know, a bunch of customers. Well, you know, you're talking about a fairly small universe to begin with. In the start of the process, but as it expands, it grows exponentially. But you know, they don't necessarily want to look at that. They want to see what you got right now, what you're doing for me right now.
Well, we should ask our startup spotlight guest, who we're going to bring on in a couple of minutes, Alex Huff. Now, I don't know if you guys know, but when I was at Vignette. Alex,
heard the story from Alex. Yeah.
Oh, did he tell you the story? Yeah. Okay. So it's, you know, basically that, you know, it was about his involvement with Vignette and doing things. So, I mean, he's been early on in leveraging content management and really understanding the space. And then he and I got to know each other when I interviewed him about loudclick.net, which is their collaborative website building content management system. And I was really intrigued by what he had put together and what they'd built. And one of the conversations that we had was him talking about, some of the ways that companies had pinged him on, hey, you know, it would be really great if you could build a network of these sites. that would leverage off of a parent. So build a parent-child model where all these children's sites would come off the parent. And who would have thunk that Alex went after a new space?
Why don't we get Alex on the phone or on the call here and I think chat a little bit about it?
Yeah, absolutely. So I will add him to our call. And we'll have him on in just a second here.
Hello.
Alex, Steve Borsch.
How are you, Steve?
Good, pal. How are you?
Very good.
On with Tim Elliott and fill in the blank Wilson.
No.
I know, like you've never heard that.
Is that Flip Wilson?
Yeah, Flip Wilson. Yeah. How you doing, Alex?
You pretty guys good. Kill you. That's all there is to
That's
it.
That's right. That's right. Well, we were just having a conversation about angel investing and funding and all that kind of stuff. And not that we want to start here because we want our listeners to know who you are and what you do. And I kind of set it up a little bit about LoudClick and ClickRight and how you kind of segued into that. But you've got quite a background. I mean, you founded Global Bridge, that technology outsourcing company, and you've been involved in content management for a long time and really in the tech space your whole career. And so can you talk just real briefly about LoudClick and then what led to ClickRight?
Well, yeah, I think there's probably three stages of that. I mean, first was, you know, I've always like you and how we met originally, probably way back in 99 or 2000, you know, I was always interested in technology, sort of developed an interest in content management and even sort of how to apply that for business or even make a product out of it. And, you know, my career is always up to LoudClick had been, you know, the typical sort of consulting company. We'd find clients, find needs, try to help them solve those. And got to a point in probably about 2006 where we started seeing all this sort of the landscape change a little bit. And it was already well on its way at that point. You know, when we talk social network, we'd be talking MySpace, which is a very different conversation today. Right. But the point was, it wasn't really staying on your own website and build it and they will come and just hope everybody flocks to your door. It was, you know, how do you have a presence on multiple places on the web? And then we sort of saw the need to say, okay, well, so that actually means managing multiple websites that are really your properties and then using those things that are available to get traffic and to get people, you know, aware of you and onto your properties. And so when we started LoudClick, we went through that angel funding round and sort of just, focused on the technology and the need we saw from the technology perspective itself. But both going through that funding process, which had been the first time in my career I've done that, and even once we had wrapped up funding and figuring out, okay, now what do we build? And then we built something and then we saw what's going on and it was, okay, well, where does this actually make us a business? And so we really, you know, spent quite a bit of time, not just focusing on the technology, but focusing on just getting it out in front of everybody we could find from individuals to really big companies in the area. And we kind of saw the need for this at their level. Mm-hmm. And so at least at that point, you know, in sort of the beginning stages of LoudClick, we had focused on this technology that lets a person manage multiple websites, but that evolved into building a platform that is something we could give to somebody else. So it wasn't just going to LoudClick, setting up an account and managing 10 websites. It now was ClickRight became this platform that we could give to companies that also sort of coordinated content across all those different sites. And when you look at, you know, when you look at how most companies have relationships with their customers, especially in the real world, you don't show up at corporate headquarters, you show up at the store and you talk to one of the salespeople on the floor and they help you find what you're looking for. And then they send you to the web and ask you to come directly to corporate headquarters. So what we're trying to do is bridge that gap that exists of how you experience a company or a brand online with how you experience it in the real world.
Well, you know, what's interesting about this is that for you to develop this as a platform that's accessible to businesses a lot smaller than Toro, for example, because back in the day with Vignette, Toro had an RFP out. They wanted to do this exact same thing because they said, hey, look, a dealer of ours in Atlanta doesn't carry snowblowers. And so we want to be able to push different product out to different market segments based on where they are. And when I brought this up yesterday, I was talking to somebody about ClickRight at this event, the collaborative event I was at yesterday, and I talked about it, and this guy looked at me and said, well, why couldn't you just do that with WordPress, you know, the old WordPress multi-user that's now part of WordPress? And I said, well, because they're discrete sites, and they're not coordinated and orchestrated, and you can't run them from one central dashboard. Are those the sorts of things that you're seeing as a huge benefit to companies?
Absolutely. And I think you kind of hit two topics there, which is one was, you know, the old, and hopefully I'm not stepping on your former Vignette toes with this,
no,
but
feel,
you
know, free,
step away. He loves it.
Stomp.
The former approach to this was, whether you're doing Vignette or whether it's a big complex WordPress implementation or anything like that, I mean, it's really expensive. It's probably in seven figures. And a lot of the customers that we've run into and targeted are not people that haven't done this and haven't made a decision to do it. It's the ones that have, and it's, you know, it's that proverbial, hey, we've spent 18 months and almost $1 million on this and we're still nowhere close, so let's just scrap it. And so they've gone down this road and it hasn't really been successful. And so for us, we wanted to make it cheaper, but when we first kind of, in the first iteration of this, we still hadn't totally accomplished that. Yeah. We brought that number from $1 million down to maybe $100,000, but sort of in the troubled times that we're all in these days, we just focused a lot of our attention and a lot of our investment back into the technology. And now, I mean, we're working on rolling out one right now that is literally 10 sites. And so it's scalable enough now because of our focusing back on, okay, so how do we make the platform almost as easy to set up as the websites are on the platform, that it's available to anybody. And so there's a lot of, you know, for every Toro there is in the world, there's probably 10,000 little guys that have 10 dealerships or 10 stores or 10 locations. So,
right.
So there's that side of it. And then I think the other side is, you know, with the WordPress and even a Vignette implementation, I mean, it's not that this hasn't been done, because it has, but it's been done on a one-by-one development basis. And since we've kind of created this platform and gotten out there, the thing that we've found that I'm not sure we expected when we first said, hey, there's a need for this, is the thing really does amazing organic search results. Because if you're able to syndicate content out from any of the sites to all these other sites in the network, you're not syndicating the content itself. You're syndicating an excerpt of the content. So you've kind of got your own built-in link exchange network. And anybody that knows how search really works, that's kind of all that matters, is how many links are out there to your stuff. And if that happens instantly, the moment you publish anything to 5,000 locations, you're in a pretty good spot there. So I think the kind of the needs and the benefits are, one, on the cost side, and two, because we've focused on just this implementation inside of a company, we found some benefits that we weren't sure we didn't know we'd have when we started, but they become kind of our, hey, this is why you do it, instead of building something like that with totally independent sites that aren't coordinated in this way.
Can you talk a little bit about your technology, kind of how you use open source or don't use open source in kind of delivering your solution?
Absolutely. You know, it's funny, because some people, as soon as you say, hey, we're on Microsoft ASP.NET and we use a Microsoft database, if you're a true evangelist of open source, it's, you know, we get the, oh, you're not open source, you're a sinner type of response. But the truth is, I mean, the entire system is built with jQuery. It's built with all of the sort of things that are out there in piecemeal that do the job really, really well. So even when you talk about the way a site is coordinated or an element inside our system, which provides specific functionality, is built because of, I mean, even just jQuery alone, I don't want to focus just on that, but jQuery lets us put functionality that's already out there and actually now create an interface for it and make it accessible to someone who might not be a JavaScript programmer, or, you know, just even simple things like a photo gallery or a, you know, slideshow type things that you see on lots of sites these days. We don't have to go in and build our own, because that's always the hardest part of being a smaller startup company, is you don't really have the resources to do everything yourself. So by looking at what's not just what's available in jQuery as sort of, hey, we can expand our features and functions this way, but even watching the things coming into jQuery for, you know, what's new and what's going to shape the web, it's much easier to do that than sit here and pretend that we can figure out what the next phase is going to be, because, you know, there are millions and millions of people out there doing it and doing it well. So we can kind of benefit from not just the open source approach to that from a technology standpoint, but even the human part of that, which is that community that's continually innovating. And as soon as it does, it becomes part of the landscape of the web and what people are doing online. And it's just a great collaborative environment in that way. And then, you know, on top of that, even sort of beyond open source, you've got the whole API side of things. You know, I mean, I have to be honest, and maybe I'm naive here, but I don't even know what Twitter is built in. But I know that we allow you to log in with a Twitter account. You know, Google is kind of open source. You know, they're very closed off with what they develop, but they're using open source technologies to do it. And instead of giving you the code, like a traditional open source Mozilla type approach, they give you API access. So that alone all of a sudden makes all these other networks and systems available to someone like us that frankly isn't going to try to build a microblogging platform on top of ours and pretend we can compete with Twitter. So there's different aspects of, we've used sort of corporate typical technology as sort of part of the infrastructure. We use jQuery and a lot of open source things for how we build functionality and how we build templates and sort of build the actual side of it that is customer facing. And then there's the API level itself, which really gives us a whole set of functionality where one person might want to automatically, every time there's a new post on their store website, post to a Twitter account. Other people don't want to, and we don't have to install or uninstall each time. We just basically hook up the API.
Yep. So you have on your site, and this is one of the areas that you and I talked about a long time ago about franchisors and their franchisees and how even LoudClick at the time made perfect sense for them. And then you have, so franchises, agencies, and then using ClickRight for essentially building market microsites. So you could support a new product launch. There's a whole bunch of stuff you could do with that. Out of those three, which ones are you the most excited about, and which one is getting the most traction in terms of either initial sales or some testing that's going on and stuff like that?
Well, and you know, I think this is just a good example of two where, you know, you bring something like this to market and you think you know where you're really going to take off, and it ends up being somewhere else. But, you know, I think initially we thought, hey, this is perfect for franchises. And the truth is, I mean, we're getting some traction there, but we are sort of going through the roof in the whole agent network category right now. I mean, between insurance agents, real estate agents, travel agents, you know, and anybody that has that sort of agency relationship right now.
Yep.
We're getting a bunch of traction, I think. And we were just kind of doing our little, okay, if all the deals we have came through, you know, dream scenario testing, we've got contracts out that would build over 100,000 sites on our platform with different companies. So the agent category is just right now taking off. And
you got to go talk to Quickstar. you know, the old Amway people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it would be so perfect, but.
Right. Right. Well, and even, you know, inside the insurance category, that's really starting to move that way. And, travels also that way where, you know, you look at how traditionally we look at those companies and how they were serving travels in some ways, maybe the best example where travel today is very different than it was when, you know, travel agencies own the space.
Right. Right.
And so now it's a matter of, wait a minute, how, you know, we're going to stop trying to control everything and almost hold our agents back. We got to let them free and we got to let them be out there. Cause let's face it, in most cases, there's a large enough agent network where if they were just active on this, it's a heck of a social network itself. So yeah, if you take that and extrapolate it one level on who they touch on a daily basis, whether it's customers, friends, family, whatever, I mean, now you're actually in a, from a number standpoint, you're in a space that competes with those, you know, TripAdvisors and Travelocity and those things that have kind of taken over that space. And you see the same thing too in insurance where, you know, we used to, everybody went through an agent. Now, a lot of people are moving to, you know, the Geicos, the Progressive, where it's, you don't need an agent at all. You just use the web. And so that statement may or may not be true because a lot of people do need an agent. I know if I'm designing an insurance policy, I'm in big trouble. So especially when you get into business and things like this, you really rely on your agent, especially if a good one, for that advice, but they're not out on the web. And so it's really this either or scenario. And we like to turn it into, well, what if it's and, you know, what if we can do both? So,
yeah.
Well, it sounds great. I mean, you're doing some great stuff and I always enjoy seeing things after years of hard work, seeing something start to pay off a little bit. So we'll look for the click right sites at McDonald's and all of those, you know, all those small franchises. What do you think?
So do I. You know, as soon as McDonald's bangs on our door, I will be very happy to open it. So,
oh boy, yeah. Drinks are on you, dude. That's all there is to it.
Exactly.
Before we wrap up with you, Alex, can you kind of give us an idea of those ideal companies that you feel this works best for, and you know, who's the target customer and that sort of thing?
Sure. Well, we've sort of defined those industry segments, and if we go by industry, we're really looking at franchising, and I would actually, franchising is more of a business model than an industry. It's really retail locations. It doesn't matter if they're corporate owned or if they're in a franchise model. It's agent networks. So, you know, insurance, real estate, travel, even direct sales, like Steve mentioned. And then it's also sort of any company that really is advanced in the way that they market itself on the web. When we talk about, and if you go to ClickRite, which is WRITE.com online.
Get it, right. Get it right. Right.
W-R-I-T. Right. Yeah. But not RIGHT. So,
right.
But if you go kind of online, you'll see the three areas that we kind of focus, which is the franchise or retail stores, the agent networks, and then the market segments. And what that is, Steve, you said it well. It's okay. We want each product to have a microsite, but it's even a level beyond that with, hey, yeah, we want an individual microsite for each product, but we want to be able to present one site to this market segment, which is women from ages 35 to 50 with a family. And then another market segment that's different where it's maybe not a family and maybe it's men, maybe it's teenagers, maybe it's, you know, whatever you've defined as those core audiences that are using your product, you've really got to present them differently to each one. And it's almost funny to me because print figured this out a long time ago. When you get a postcard these days or a shiny direct mail piece, you're typically going to see a photo on it that's a variable image that says, hey, we're sending this to a woman, so we're going to put a picture of a woman. We're sending this to a man, so we're going to put a picture of a man. It might even be age specific. It might even be family specific. It might even be income specific. So, and the one of the interesting parts of sort of as we've gone to market with this and really started to get some attention around it is just the channel partner side of it as well. I mean, I'd say right now, one out of every two deals or meetings that we're coming to is through the ad agencies, through PR firms, even through, you know, any sort of marketing or integrated marketing company where they're still calling them, they're still setting themselves up and presenting themselves in integrated marketing, and they are, but in a lot of cases, that's still sort of missing that web component. So when you get to what this can do with landing pages, what this can do to support some of the efforts that they've already been doing, it really is kind of exciting to see how they add that layer to it that, frankly, you know, isn't just coming from a tech or an interactive or even a customer perspective at the end client. It's coming as a new idea in a way that they could do this better from their agencies themselves or their agency themselves. So. Yeah.
Well, one thing I'd like to suggest right before you scoot here is that people go to the site. I'll put a link in the show notes. Click write, WRITE.com, and sign up for a demo because you can listen to Alex talk about this all day long, but unless you actually see the thing work and understand, you're going to gain an immediate understanding of what it is and how it works. And that's when the light bulbs start to glow a little brighter. And you think, hey, you know, I could use this, or I have a client that could use this,
right.
And you're doing those every Thursday, right?
Yeah, we are. And okay. and actually, I kind of have to take my hat off to our team, which I can take absolutely no credit for because I've always I've been talking about this for a long time, but we've never really been able to put out a concise, really well done message on what is it, how does it work, who should use it, why would you use it, and I feel like the website, the ClickRite website, is just great work by our whole team. I mean, specifically, you know, Paul Conradi does all of our sort of customer support, but writes all our content, and then Kristen Hortenbach did all those little drawings, which I think are really, yeah, I think we've seen this trend even as you saw like things like Google Wave, which is sort of a dated reference at this point, but yeah. People got all excited about Google Wave because of that like in plain English approach where technology became unintimidating. So
it turned out to be the most intimidating service.
Yeah. This, but the marketing of it, the marketing of it was great. I mean, come on. I thought, hey, this is going to change my life, a new approach to email. And then you got in there and you were a little disappointed, but that's a whole nother issue. But I think for us, we really, you know, in some ways I'm that geek that, you know, is so focused on the technology and all the millions of places that it could apply that we never really put a message together that people went, okay, yeah, that's me. I could use that. It fits for me good. And frankly, this has given us that focus too around it. So, I mean, we've done a great team. Our developers and the founders have all kind of come together around this. And then recently we actually brought on a new person as our new president, Paul Stettler, who's helping with a number of things. One is potentially looking at a second round of funding. And another is just sort of, you know, taking us from this scrappy little startup to, all right, we gotta mature and we've really gotta put things in place that make us a real company. So all those things are kind of coming together at the same time. Maybe it's the universe telling us something, or maybe it's we've just put so much blood, sweat, and tears that it's finally starting to catch
it. It's all good. So, well, Alex, thanks very much.
Man, this has been great.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Continue good luck, and we'll talk to you soon.
Continue success with LoudClick and ClickRite, and you know, we'll see you on the beach.
Yeah. Thanks, everybody.
All right, man.
See you
later.
Take
care.
Bye-bye.
Well, he's got a tiger by the tail. It's people want more power and they want to put forth less effort and they want to move faster. And, you know, those are three reasons why I think ClickRite's going to do very well.
His energy doesn't hurt either.
Doesn't hurt. But it was funny when he said he's a geek and all that, because I was thinking about the API discussion and I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, okay, I get it. And I'm thinking about other people listening to this, like, what? What the hell is he talking about? I don't care about that.
You think?
You think?
Yeah. It's all right. We have every right to get geeky.
We do.
Yeah. Tim, are you still with us, brother? I'm concerned.
I am here.
I was concerned. No. So what do we got coming up events-wise in the next week here?
Well, Well, Startup Weekend is now. And next week is the Rainmaker Conference. Okay. I know we've talked about these on previous shows, but then MEMA is after that.
I also have a couple of new events, Social Media Plus Family, an event being sponsored by the Social Media Club of Minnesota. That is coming up on the 22nd, which is next week at the Depot.
Okay.
And you might want to check that out. And also, I'm happy to say that I'll be moderating a panel at an MHTA event coming up on Thursday, October 7th. And again, it's the topic is social media getting started for MHTA members. So it should
be fabulous.
And interesting, you know, we don't want to, it's not going to be too rudimentary, but it's not going to be too API-ish. So
yeah.
So hopefully you can join us for that.
Somehow I'm surprised that you wouldn't get into APIs, Phil.
Yeah, we're right. That's me. Yeah. I'm all about the API.
I know you are.
We're still trying to overcome the OAuth stuff for Comic Twit. So,
oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and it's, I just see that's the thing. You know what? I wasn't going to talk about this, but we got a couple of minutes. I have been so focused on how great it is to have all these apps and stuff in the cloud.
Yeah.
And I had a client that was using Dotster. And they wanted to stay on Dotster.
And all right. He's going to rant, ladies and gentlemen.
I'm going to rant.
So what you're going to say is don't use Dotster. I think we can.
Well, I am going to say that.
You have this huge graphic that says do not use Dotster on your post.
I'll put a link in the show notes so everyone can look at the graphic.
Because Steve is that pissed.
I am, yes. But here's the point. The point is that they use Parallels virtualization technology. So you could spawn an instance of WordPress, Drupal, Joomla, fill in the blank, you know, wikis, all kinds of different open source apps. And the number of permissions issues with it was just horrendous. But the punchline was, is their own support people literally did not know how to point the main domain name at the virtual instance. And so I was having this conversation about .htaccess and how to configure that and path names. You know, what's the path name?
Steve, you're geeking out on it.
Well, I am geeking out, but my point, here's where I wanted to go with that. It's like the support people didn't know what I was talking about.
Right. Now, so know your product would be the thing.
Oh my God.
Would be the overall point.
The overall point, yeah, and have a product that works. Cool. But what was interesting about that is that, you know, Tim, you and I have gone through, and you much more so than I, about examination of a whole bunch of different hosting adventures. You're on a dedicated box now. You're also on cloud sites at Rackspace. We've both been on Media Temple. You're at DreamHost also. I'm got stuff going at Bluehost. What I see happening is a lot of people are looking at these and they're using these without understanding the pros and cons between web hotels and then what happens if I go to a dedicated box or what happens if I buy a slice off of a virtual private server network. You know, Tim, what are you seeing with challenges like this, with people that are betting their business or a mission critical application on the cloud? Is it you get what you pay for?
Pretty much. I think that if your site grows to any reasonable size, that you have to consider either dedicated hosting or some sort of a cloud hosted solution that involves a CDN and all that stuff for performance reasons, especially if you're using something like WordPress. So when you get to that size, there are very few alternatives out there. There's you can build on top of the Amazon S3 platform. You can do what, you know, go with Rackspace and their cloud sites and such. And that's about it. Or you can roll your own, which I don't think a lot of people want to do. So for something that's as easy as a one-click install sort of deal, there aren't a lot of good solutions. When your site gets to a certain size.
Well, you know, what was interesting was listening to Jamie Thingelstead at this collaborative event. And for those that don't know Jamie, he was one of the co-founders of BigCharts.com, which did financial charting of stock results, and ended up ultimately selling that to CBS MarketWatch, who in turn sold himself to Dow Jones. And the punchline is that he ended up at Dow Jones as a head of IT. And now he's CIO for Elvenda, the Minnesota Cup winner from last year that does the hosted advertising and marketing model. And he brought up the fact that, you know, he's owned and run data centers and set up data centers and gone through all the machinations that you do with that. And he said, now we're at Amazon Web Services. And he said, not only do I not know where their servers are located and the failover servers are located, I don't care.
Yeah.
So to your point, you know, if you know what you're doing and you choose the right platform, magic can happen, I guess. Other than when you're at the low end trying to do things, it can get ugly.
Well, I think there's a big opportunity for hosts right now, because there is this huge gap between performance and price. So you can get anywhere from, you know, $20 to $50 a month and get pretty, you know, pretty good service for that.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, if you want to get to the next level, you need to get to something like a Rackspace Cloud Sites that's $150 a month. So there's this,
yeah,
between $20, $30 to $150 range that I think is huge, that someone needs to fill, and I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it either, and believe me, I've looked.
Hopefully someone will do that. There's plenty of people fighting at the $6.99 a month, or, you know, $10 a month kind of a thing, and they all pretty much deliver the same sort of service.
Well, and there's so many people out there like you and I, Tim, and Phil, I'd put you in the same camp too, that have visions for applications and have implementations that we're doing, and for the most part, we don't want to own a hosting company, or we don't want to really be a hosting company.
Listen, before we bail though, and yeah. I think you make some great points, but before we bail, anybody got the new Twitter yet?
Not me.
No, not me either.
What do you have to do to get it?
It's just supposed to load. I thought it was supposed to just pop into your Twitter account.
Yeah. Yeah. It's supposed to just show up, but I haven't seen it yet. It looks interesting.
Huh.
I saw a great tweet from a friend of mine, Webby2001, who's Tom Webster at Edison Research. And he had a tweet yesterday, third day, still no Twitter, morale low, supplies running out, had to eat guide.
Well, it's not exactly like your Mexican miners trapped, you know, waiting for them to dig a pit. I think we'll be okay.
Yeah, I think so too. But anyway, well, that should do it for us for this week. And next week, we'll see what happens next week.
Hopefully we'll all have the new Twitter by then.
Ooh. Oh,
God, I hope so. I can't wait.
We'll just be better people for it, won't we?
That's right. All right, gentlemen.
Have a great week, everybody.
Yeah, you too. Take care. Bye-bye.
just to take this seat. Never will I see that day when that feeling might go away. Treasure you can't claim.